Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Alrighty, welcome to the Celtics Lab podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Tempestify. I'm joined by Alex Goldberg and Dr. Justin Quinn. Later in the episode, we're going to talk to Pete Rogers, who you might know from Twitter. He has been designing really spectacular Celtics jerseys after every win. They're Dunkin' Donuts themed, they're MBTA themed, they're creative, they're gorgeous. So we're going to talk to him. He also is a big player in fantasy sports, so we'll talk to him about that. But that is all in the second half of the program and the lab portion of the program. Instead, as we like to do, we'll start with the news. But before all of that, Alex, Justin, how are you?
Doing okay, just trying to land the plane at the end of the semester. Winter break is a mere 4 days away.
For some of us.
I'm moving, and that's all I'm going to say. We all know how much fun that is.
Yeah, I just got a new puppy, so I have a new personality, which is nice. Trying that one on for size, it's great. You'll see Ricky Bobby all over social media for hopefully the next 15 to 25 years. Who knows? Anyways, we'll drop into the news, and then later again in the pod, we'll talk to Pete Rogers. But first, before we talk about the current Celtics, let's talk about some former Celtics, specifically Paul Silas, who over the weekend passed away. Silas, most notably perhaps for Celtics fans, won three titles in his career, two with Boston in 74 and 76. He's also all NBA defensive first team in 75 and an all-star in 75. So a huge contributor to maybe an unsung era of Boston Celtics basketball, I guess is fair to say. Dr. Quinn, you've been really on this and doing some exciting work about remembering Paul Silas. What should fans know, and what are some fun things that you've uncovered in kind of eulogizing him?
Well, I mean, it's never really fun is not a word that I would use to describe such a situation, but looking back on his life, giving the man some flowers that, again, we really got to give these people their flowers while they're living. I like how you characterize that era under Coach Tommy Heinsohn in that capacity, as opposed to a player or a broadcaster. And his second act as a Celtic was leading the team that Paul Silas won two of his three championships on. If you dig into his history, and you should, you can read some excellent articles about his trade from Phoenix and how he almost held out until Red Auerbach talked him into joining the team. And he has some interesting roots in Oakland. He went to the same high school as Bill Russell, courtesy of friend of the pod, Honest Larry, digging that up. As did his cousin, Ruth Poynter of the Poynter Sisters. With a little bit of luck, Celtics Wire will have something about that fairly soon, so keep an eye out for that. But, you know, beyond Silas's career as a player, as a power forward, one of the all-time, I think he's the all-time leading rebounder for Creighton, his alma mater, he also had a three-decade-plus coaching career that he passed on to his son, who is now the coach of the Houston Rockets. Stephen Silas, and he is widely renowned around the league for all the people's lives he touched, including one LeBron James, who he was the first coach of. He was really a big figure in the NBA community, and we are all the worse for his passing.
Yeah, I really like that characterization, and maybe we're a little proactive about this because we're writing, you know, Celtics history stuff kind of on the daily and on the back burner, but it does stink that, you know, the most vaunted members of the Boston Celtics are getting old, and we are not really celebrating them until certain days pass. So I don't know. Paul Silas, really important part of Boston Celtics history, and maybe some of his contemporaries who are still with us, we should celebrate a little bit more before they end up being a little factoid at the beginning of a podcast kind of thing. It feels a little reductive in a way. Alex, anything we missed?
Sorry. No, not really. I mean, I think JQ covered it pretty well, as he always tends to do with Celtics history stuff. You know, the only thing I will say is I definitely agree with the sentiment that, you know, we do need to celebrate the living a little bit more while they are actually here than, you know, continue to do these kind of posthumous tributes, as nice as they are and yeah, as important as they are. Knowing that kind of there is another generation of Celtics greats that is getting up there in years and will likely be doing this again and again and again for the foreseeable future, it is important, particularly now with COVID being the reality that it is, to kind of do stuff like this. And so, you know, I think one of the nice things about working with you guys is that JQ is becoming something of a Celtics historian, and you can kind of regularly find his work on Celtics Wire and stuff like that. So if you're interested in celebrating the lives of these people while they are still alive, Celtics Wire and Celtics Lab have got you covered.
Also, CLNS NBA History Channel on YouTube. Make sure you check that out. It is loaded with great stuff. I don't know how we do this in a way that isn't morbid, because, you know, like if you start giving someone their flowers because you don't want them to be dead before you give them to them, it's almost like, yeah, we think you're going to die soon. So it's a little fraught. We'll figure out how to do that. But as a general challenge to the Celtics community, let's find ways to do that.
Maybe just like universally, we should, when you turn like 60, have a quinceañera or something like that, like a big party. Yeah. So it's like you get to be celebrated, but it's not like too close to the end necessarily. And just like, I don't know if anyone listening to this has clout in the culture. But yeah, Paul Silas, Michael Jordan called him an incredible motivator. Danny Ainge said he was a wonderful human being. It's really clear how big an impact he had on the NBA community. Incidentally, his number 35 was not retired by the Boston Celtics. That number
it's
is retired.
Not in the Hall of Fame either.
It could change, but the number 35 is retired because of Reggie Lewis. If anyone sees that number at the Garden anytime soon, while we're plugging and promoting and whatnot, the music from the top of this podcast comes from Divine Sweater. I've got some new tunes coming your way in January and a few cool shows along the way. So check out Divine Sweater on social. Anyways. Let's talk about the Boston Celtics, the current Boston Celtics. And the news is good insofar as Rob Williams and Al Horford ought to be back soon. The news is less good and that the Boston Celtics lost to the Warriors in kind of an ugly way. And we're recording this a little bit before a game against the Clippers where they won't have Rob or Al Horford. I personally would be surprised if those two guys play against Los Angeles, but that remains to be seen. Before we get into that, let's pause the action and talk about our friends over at Bet Online, your number one source for all your sports betting for football and basketball this season. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at betonline.ag. Always your continued source for sports wagering information. Bet Online features live betting, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable. Now, the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, and golf games and events. Head to betonline.ag today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just make sure to use our promo code CLNS50 to receive that reward. Bet online, where the game starts. Okay. Well, we'll talk about Rob in a second. Alex, I'll go to you first. Thoughts on the Warriors game?
Thoughts on the Warriors game? Yeah, I had a few of them. Obviously, it's disappointing. It was a much hyped rematch between the two finalists from last year. And I think myself and a lot of other Celtics fans were looking forward to the possibility of some revenge against the Golden State Warriors. That will have to wait until they next meet up on Boston's home floor. You know, it's a little bit disappointing, both that they lost and really in the fashion that they lost it in which the Warriors blitzed Jason Tatum early and often on defense, completely took him out of rhythm. And then Klay Thompson and Steph Curry did what they do and just got impossibly hot from deep. And there was basically nobody who could actually stop them. I do think that we shouldn't put too much stock into it, in particular because missing the two defensive linchpins in the front court of Al Horford and Rob Williams is incredibly significant, particularly for this matchup. One of the things that I think we saw in the finals last year and that we saw again this time around is that Kevon Looney really dominated the Celtics up front. He pushed around Blake Griffin, Luke Cornett, Grant Williams, and kind of had his way with them. And I think with Rob and Al back, that would be hopefully a radically different proposition. I do want to give credit to the Warriors as well. Andrew Wiggins was out. He was a really big part of their finals run last year, and they are a much better team with Andrew Wiggins. That being said, I'm not putting a tremendous amount of stock into this. It's a regular season game. The Celtics are still, I think, pretty clearly the best team in the league. This is not a good matchup for them, and Jason Tatum in particular has some work to do with regard to this matchup, but there's also reasons for optimism. The play of Jaylen Brown, the play of Malcolm Brogdon, you know, I think all things being equal, I'm kind of ready to shrug this one off. It's disappointing, but the sky is not far from falling.
Yeah, I wouldn't add too much more to that. The only thing that I would take away from this is related to the Kevon Looney comment that you made, in that if the Celtics do make a trade before the trade deadline, I would expect it to be to find a more competent, more mobile third big. Luke Cornett can do it in a lot of situations, but they do need a guy who can fit a little bit better for this kind of a matchup.
I mean, the Eclipse isn't doing it for you?
Not in this context, no.
Alex, just because you teased it, Golden State comes to town on January 19th. That's the second, according to, I'm just looking at the schedule on ESPN, those tickets are $185 a pop to start. Jeez. That's the second most expensive home game left on the calendar. The most expensive would be against Los Angeles, where tickets are going for $203. Can you guys guess the third and fourth most expensive home games remaining according to this website I'm looking at right now?
Los Angeles Lakers are going to be one of them.
No, that was number one. That's wow. That's the number one.
Sorry. Okay, good.
That's the $203 one.
All right. Okay.
So number three is Phoenix, and number four, the Memphis Grizzlies. The people want to see Ja.
I love Ja Morant. Hottest ticket in town.
Yeah.
Fourth.
I'm going to try to go to those games because they seem like they're pretty good. I shared my thoughts on that game over on the How About Them Seas podcast. So if you want my take on that, go check out friends over at the How About Them Seas podcast, because they were nice enough to have me on. Justin, you talked about it, so we can pivot to that. December 15th marks the day where newly signed players can then be traded from their newly signed contracts for the season. So I think offhand, it's like 60 to 70 new players are added to the would-be possible to be traded pool. Do we think that that is going to radically change the calculus for the Boston Celtics in the near term, Justin?
I highly doubt it. I mean, it could happen. Again, if somebody who is trying to break for Vic is really trying to sell off and, you know, a potentially important piece for Boston, something that could, you know, fulfill a need for several seasons to come, that kind of a player, maybe we might see a substantial trade, but I highly, highly doubt it. Like I was hinting at earlier, it's going to be a small salary guy with a small kind of impact who's only useful in a situation where you need a better matchup.
Alex, do you have anyone early on your radar that December 15th is important?
You know, if you've heard a lot of names batted around, your Jakob Pertls or your Yusuf Nurkic's, you know, these are guys that I think by and large would be out of the Celtics price range as currently kind of posited. I don't see a whole lot there. I mean, maybe if like Mason Plumlee shakes loose for cheap, something like that. But honestly, I think the more likely outcome is that the Celtics, if they're making any trades, would be looking to recoup some draft equity and then roll that over into future deadlines. I kind of doubt that they are going to be in a place to get a high impact player with the trade assets that they have. And I do think that there is something to the idea that the Celtics might want to consider with the roster that they have, if everybody is staying for the most part healthy, particularly when Al and Rob come back. I do think there's something to the idea that prioritizing future flexibility to kind of keep adding to this team as necessary in years to come is not the worst call.
Yeah, my thoughts on the matter are thus. First, the Celtics, after their two games in LA, will embark on a 7-game homestand. That's the longest of the season, with some favorable matchups. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Celtics really recapture those winning ways in a big way in the second half of December, such that the impetus to make a trade sooner rather than later just like wouldn't be there. Justin, I am very inclined to agree that a mobile, more athletic, defensive-minded big needs to be probably brought in. As much as Blake Griffin is good for, you know, the locker room, and Luke Kornet is a hilarious player to root for. I think the Warriors game made it clear that Boston just like isn't as athletic down low without their two starting guys. But also, the kind of parenthetical was their two starting big men are older or oft injured. So, you know, you can't take anything for granted in the NBA. And I just don't think that you can take for granted that Horford and Robert Williams are going to play 95% of playoff games just because expect the unexpected in the NBA.
Yep.
I will say this for January, because January and February are, that's when you milk the trade buzz for clicks and listens. I'm curious about what going all in looks like for the Celtics, because they're pretty all in, but not the most all in. We've seen teams with limited championship windows. So I'm curious about maybe getting like hyper aggressive here, which is crazy to say about a team that's solidly 10 deep. But that's a conversation for another day. Speaking of teases, yeah, Alex, you'll just have to wait. Speaking of teases, hopefully this year we're bringing back our Festivus tradition. So Alex, you can air a grievance for that take specifically if you'd like and you're around. So be on the lookout next week, hopefully on or around December 23rd. Well, I don't know, pour a glass of bourbon and just blow off some steam. But you can look forward to that in the not too distant future. In the near term, we are going to use the power of editing to pause the action. And on the other side of probably not really a break at all, we'll talk to Pete Rogers, the gentleman who you might know either from, you know, fantasy sports or from his increasingly just amazing Celtics jerseys that he's been animating and dropping. So we'll talk to Pete Rogers on the other side of a break. Okay, let's hop into the Celtics lab, as we like to say. And we're going to welcome in Pete Rogers. You might know him from his jerseys that he's been designing on Twitter, which we will get into in a moment. You might also know him from Nerdball Fantasy Football, or from being a twin dad, which I just learned. As a twin myself, that's perhaps the thing I'm most excited about. So on the behalf of my twin sister and the Hayward twins, Pete Rogers, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, you guys.
Yeah, the pleasure's all ours. Love the jerseys. I want to ask you first and foremost, you know, where did you come up with this? And how did you, you know, you've gained some notoriety. When did it become a little more than just like a pet project? And off the jump, do you have a favorite one so far?
Oh, the favorite one I should have. I'll think on that one. But yeah. So I have always been into graphic design. And it wasn't until the pandemic hit that I started channeling that into jersey design, just because I, at that point, happened to stumble upon a kind of old, decent template for Photoshop. And so that's what I was using. And so I mocked up some NBA jerseys. Then I found some NFL templates. And so I redid the whole leagues. And then this year, for this season, I wanted to do something specifically Celtics related. I grew up outside of Boston, just moved to Minnesota, wanted something that would keep me in touch with the team and like paying attention, since it is an 82-game season and you got to be committed in order to stay up on what's going on. And actually the inspiration came from Rita Oak, who's an artist who herself gained Twitter notoriety for drawing Jimmy G every day until he gets traded.
Oh yeah.
And so I was like, oh, that's a really cool idea. Like that, you know, makes you work at that kind of creative bone, makes you do something different every day. And I was like, all right, well, I can't make a jersey every day. That's way too much. But then I was like, all right, let's do every time the Celtics win, they get a new jersey. And I thought that was a great idea simply because, I didn't expect them to win this many games, but I thought there would be a good number of wins that we would do, and thus would have to make good jerseys. And the Celtics feels like a team that people are always kind of hesitant to do really creative jerseys for, because it is such an iconic look and people don't really want to stray from that. And so I was like, all right, well, if I have to do, you know, 50 plus jerseys, I'm going to have to do some really wild ones, and we'll see what kind of people think about that and where it goes. And I did not anticipate the kind of public support that the series has garnered this quickly. I think I started with 2,000-ish Twitter followers, and now it's like almost 8,000, and that's all simply due to the jerseys, and just they really have blown up and people have really shared their feelings about it, which is, and for the most part, they've all been really pro, which puts a little pressure on me, because if I like this last jersey, which hasn't come out yet, so let's go win and let's see it. But I kind of came to it with not really an idea, which I was worried about, because it's only jersey 22 and got a lot more. But I think it's been a lot of fun, and it's definitely shifted away from like a pet project, just something I'm doing on my own time, to like something that feels a part of like the Celtics community. And I'm that makes it all the more enjoyable and all the more fun to do.
Cool. You got a back to back coming up. You might need to
come. I know. I got to start putting them in the bank and having them to call. That's why I'm kind of sad that I didn't save my. It was really easy to do the like Boston, other Boston teams inspired jerseys, because it was just like, oh, make it look like the Patriots, make it look like the Bruins, and, you know, make it look like the Red Sox. Yeah. The more creative ones are when you're kind of going from blank slate and like, all right, I got to give myself a lot more head time before to get those in ready in order.
For us Southern New England Celtics fans, maybe a Whalers-inspired jersey.
I have heard of a couple of those, and I'm here for it. That's definitely on my – I have a whole bookmark. My Twitter bookmarks are all just of suggestions, and so anytime I need one, I'll, like, scroll through and be like, okay, I like this. The Whalers one is a popular one. And I mean, of course, it's a gorgeous jersey, so the OG ones are. So it makes sense that it would look good as a basketball jersey.
The NBTA one was superb. I just have to Thank throw you. That. That was like easily my favorite one. I would buy that in real life.
Yeah, that one I was very happy with how that one ultimately all came together. That one was a long one to do.
There was an interesting comment when you posted it on Twitter. Someone added a special little detail of a particular flame on one of the lines. Evidently, I've never ridden on the T as a Connecticut Yankee, but now I really don't want to.
Oh, yeah. The red line's dangerous. You take your life into your own hands when you jump on the red.
Yeah. It's a charming little system we've got here, but it's certainly not efficient.
I wanted to have the green line under construction across the whole other side of the jersey, since they swear it's going to connect Boston to Somerville.
I was going to say, you could have a green line extension jersey. It just never comes out.
Just never. There you go. Perfect.
Although they did open it today. So.
Oh, there you go. Oh, wow.
Good luck to the first riders. Yeah. Pete, you're up in Minnesota now. Before I swing things to Alex, I just have to ask, A, have you become a Timberwolves fan? And B, what do you think of the Timberwolves jerseys?
So I'll start with B. The T-Wolves jerseys, I mean, those OG ones are just gorgeous, untouchable. And I really like elements of their new, I think it's the city one, the Northern Lights one that they did. I like those, the elements of that. I think there's still kind of a better way to do it. In fact, I actually mocked a Northern Lights one way back when that I, not to say that mine is better, but I like that one. but the Northern Lights, I think that is a really obvious inspiration that they can really start drawing from. And similarly that the way that the Heat did too much of it, but Miami Vice, the Heat found that vibe and was like, all right, we're going to make 15 jerseys from that. I think the Timberwolves, there's so many iconic colors from the Northern Lights that you can do gradients, you can do cool text colors. Like, you can just do a whole bunch of different ideas that are all stemming from the Northern Lights. So I'm glad that they've like dipped their toe into that pool, and I hope they continue with that.
T-Wolves had a Prince inspired jersey a while back.
That was nice too.
Incredible. They need to bring that one back.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it's why I'm also like their city ones. I guess it was a statement because the city one, the colored lines.
Yeah.
The idea is great. Like, I know the murals that they're drawing from, and it's a really cool idea. The execution was way off. Especially since they did such a good Prince one, like, you're kind of hoping that they were able to maybe be a little bit better of channeling the creativity. But
now that you're talking about, you know, natural phenomenons in terms of jersey design, maybe Boston could get a nor'easter one. It just be like dark and gray.
Just dark and gray. You can't see anything, and it's just kind of a pain. It's annoying to have on.
Yeah, it's just wet.
It just comes soaking wet for you. That's what you pay extra for, the true nor'easter experience.
Lovely. I'm so happy that it's the beginning of winter and not the end. All right. Yeah. Alex, as promised, you're in charge of the ship. Go ahead, steer away.
All right. So first off, again, thank you for being here, Pete. So I do have a vested interest in you being on here. I'll be fully transparent in saying that. And that is that I have recently come into some luck. I've secured a bye for my fantasy football playoffs. And you are something of a fantasy football expert. So we're going to break down a little bit of that in the pod as well. In addition to your impressive jerseys, you have an area of expertise here, and we want to get that on record. So let's start with this. How's your season gone?
It's been pretty good. So my home league, I am currently tops in that league. I've survived my absolute miss on Kyle Pitts, which is devastating. I was so high on him last year, and he more or less paid off. And then I was like, okay, the only way he can go is up as soon as he has positive touchdown regression. Did not think that he could get any worse, but he did. Have survived that. And currently that's the league I care the most about. I'm also in a dynasty league, which I halfway through decided to do a full rebuild, but then I've won 4 games in a row. So my rebuild is kind of taking a hit. But yes. So the home league though, sitting good, feeling good.
So let's stick with the home league team MVP. And you've already mentioned what appears to be your biggest bust in Kyle Pitts, but let's go team MVP.
Team MVP. Probably I was very happy. I snagged Christian McCaffrey. I had the 102. So I got Christian McCaffrey, which has been a delight. Stephon Diggs has been a delight. I think the biggest one for me though, is mostly because he was a waiver target, and I always like to have success when I hit the waiver wire. And that was Justin Fields. Snagged him before he went absolutely lights out. And so have been riding that way for a little bit. And that's been wonderful. Been carrying the team. So
any good trades that you pulled off?
I managed to snag both Kenneth Walker and Travis Etienne before they took over their backfields. Kenneth Walker, I kind of, that one I went out a little bit on a limb on. It's easy to say in retrospect, like, oh, it's clear and obvious hit. I didn't quite have the confidence that with Pete Carroll running the show that he was going to be like the unquestioned bell cow in Seattle. You never really know what's going on there, but that has paid dividends. And then ATN, I was just like, all right, this guy is so good. He played with Trevor Lawrence. I just did not think that there was a way for him to miss. And he hit for 3 weeks and now he's kind of missing. So that one's iffy.
JQ, you got a question?
Yeah. Do you play NBA like basketball?
I do. I have a league with a dynasty league with some friends of mine. And I will say that the way we structured this league is there's no bench. So it's your lineup and you just are playing the whole time. Mm-hmm. So I don't really check it that much. Which is never good because I will check it after a couple of weeks and I realize that half my team is injured. But the shining star on that one is that when I joined the league, I joined in for the guy who had lost everything. So I had the 101, and it was the year that Luka was a rookie. So I'm sitting pretty with Luka, and that's basically that's my team.
Any Celtics on it?
I got Derek White.
Nice.
Yeah. He was snagged him off waivers. And I think, do I have anyone else? I think that might be it. My brother is also in this league, and he has Tatum, and that's
that's been
very nice.
Not bad for a dynasty league.
Yeah, that's a good player to be holding on to.
Yeah, swinging back to the football realm for a second, you have a preferred app between ESPN, Yahoo, Sleeper, or something else?
Sleeper. I was on ESPN. We did that for a while, my home league, and then we switched over to Sleeper. And my wife gets kind of annoyed with it. She finds it not as intuitive as other platforms. But I think that the options that they offer is just unparalleled. And the customized scoring, the amount of customized scoring you can do, I really love. We have all kinds of wild 40-plus yard touchdowns are worth basically another touchdown in our league. And so all kinds of like fun stats like that, where it's not only just that you want good players, but also like truly explosive guys can suddenly just put up ridiculous games.
It's a fascinating scoring system. So let's move on to the most important topic, which is my team. So I have a bye this week, which is great. One of two teams in a bye, but I'm wondering from your perspective as an advanced strategic mind of the game of fantasy football, what do I need to do in my bye week, even though my team is not playing, to ensure that I will be the one winning the big pot of money at the end of the season?
So the only thing you can do is just relentlessly shit talk everyone else in your league to making mistakes. That's yeah. all you do is you just constantly pester everyone. You make them second guess every decision that they make during this. And then you're sitting pretty because by the time you're actually playing with them, they're so rattled, they don't even know how to set a lineup.
It's a really good plan. Thank you so much.
I don't know if it translates, but there's somebody in my league who just makes ridiculous trade requests constantly.
Yeah.
Kind of a corollary.
Yeah, yeah. Or the one, there's a guy in my home league who will just basically, like in the 24 hours leading up to Sunday, he will just add and drop like 20 different players. And so all you're getting notifications like this person added and dropped this person, this person added and dropped this person, this person added and dropped this person. And you're just like, all right, I can't tell if you just like are wildly incompetent, you like don't know who to start, or you're just messing with all of us and you're clearly just like having fun adding people off waivers.
Good to know. All right, we got a couple more fantasy football questions and then we'll wrap this up. In your opinion, so you're a big, I looked at your Twitter page a little bit before this, and it seems like you're a big stats analysis data guy when it comes to fantasy football, which is very important for how winning works. And definitely, you know, that like that's a crucial part of this. So in your mind, what are the most important stats or data points to keep track of when it comes to making fantasy football decisions?
So this is the whole kind of idea behind Nerdball, which is the site. So I created it with a friend of mine. We both were working at SB Nation and we left to kind of start this site. And the idea being to really basically bring the kind of like high level analytics that baseball went through to fantasy football. And so we have our own stats that we track and create. But the ones that I really like, and I'll talk about those just toot my own horn, but the ones I really like are target share and opportunity share. Target share for wide receivers and tight ends. You can do that for running backs as well. And then opportunity share, we track it as at different sites will track kind of have different definitions in terms of what their opportunity share is. For us, we do running teams running back attempts and targets. So it's the opportunity that the running back gets. And like for both of those, the thing that I like most about those, this is just, you know, it boils down to if you're on the field with high opportunity, you're more than likely to produce something. And so if you have a high target share, you're more than likely to do something. If you have a high opportunity share for running back, you're more than likely to do something. And it's a really easy way to put a number to like kind of the work, especially in the backfield. So like people will say like, we're worried about Damian Pierce not being a workhorse back for the Texans. But you can point to like, well, he's had 70% of the opportunity share in Houston. So he is like, you can worry about other running backs or whatever. And it's another thing too, where you can think about like, you know, if there's a running back, for instance, like Kansas City's backfield is kind of a hot mess right now. Clyde Edwards-Helaire had it locked down. And then Isaiah Pacheco came in for that and was starting. And now Jerick McKinnon is coming in and doing some work there. And so the opportunity share there is really dispersed. However, so then what you're looking for is players who will take the most out of the opportunities they get. And for us, we track what we call per rating, which is based off of per 36 for basketball, which is the idea of fantasy points per stat. So for quarterbacks, it's fantasy points per attempt, fantasy points for touch for running backs, and then for tight ends and for wide receivers, fantasy point per target. And so you get a sense of that. So like, Jerick McKinnon, who I just wrote a waiver wire column today, he was my top guy. Jerick McKinnon has averaging 0.9 fantasy points per touch, which is top 10 among running backs this season. And so as his target share has started to increase in recent weeks, his opportunity share has increased in recent weeks. He's extremely efficient with the opportunities that he gets. And that's going to lead you to what we saw last week, which is a big touchdown, a big fantasy performance. So using those kinds of stats and data, it helps you, especially it allows you to see players who, like, if they had a larger role, what could they actually be producing? And it lets you kind of take advantage of that on the waiver wire, finding guys who, you know, maybe aren't getting a huge opportunity right now, but due to injury or due to just the depth chart or however things are working, you're suddenly getting guys really balling out and going to give you big scoring outputs.
So what you're saying is I should drop Michael Carter and pick up a second defense and keep Bam Knight, among other things.
Yes,
okay. Totally. Good to know. Got one more fantasy football question for you. So If you know, there's a few people who are listening to this podcast, and I would gather that a handful of them also have fantasy football teams. As the expert, what, if any, essential advice would you give to fantasy football players on how to win their leagues?
At this point, I don't know if there's much that I can offer. Your trade deadline's probably already passed. Waivers are pretty thin. At the beginning of the year, though, this is actually an advice that one of the guys from my site says a lot, which I really like and I've taken to heart, is that as soon as the draft is over, don't worry about draft value. So if you drafted a guy in the first round and like that was your guy and it's just not working out, there's no harm in moving on from him. You know, trade him, drop him, whatever it needs to be. If you hold on to a player for too long, it's going to sink your team. It's going to sink your season. And so if you think that, like, so for instance, I drafted Ezekiel Elliott in the third round this year, and I was like, oh, this is a lock. Zeke has never finished anything less than an RB1. I'm a freaking genius. Let's knock this out of the park. It didn't come to fruition. Zeke has not been that running back this year. And I probably moved on from him a little too late, but still I was like, I think it was like week 4 or week 5, I traded him. And so not worrying about draft capital and being like, okay, let me reevaluate my lineup. And then that's also too, is like never being complacent with the roster that you have. So even if you're winning your league by a huge margin, go attack the waiver wire. Go be super aggressive. Go get those guys. Like, you know, when I regret this, when Christian Watson broke out and was on waivers and could have gotten for cheap, I didn't get him because I was like, ah, is he actually going to really stick? Is this really, is he going to be averaging 20 points a game? He is. Yes. And do I need the wide receiver help? You know, whatever. And so I should have gotten him. Like, I should have been like, yes, I'm going to burn all my fab to get him and let's get Christian Watson on this team. So I think it's always just like being able to, from a week to week basis, because that's what fantasy is, week to week, reevaluate your team, be aggressive with your waiver moves, be aggressive with trades. And if there are people who you think like are going to hit big, go get them. It's all about enjoying yourself and building a team that you have fun rooting for. And sometimes it hits. You know, I went out and got Kenneth Walker and Travis Etienne and it worked awesome for the first 3 weeks. And now Kenneth Walker's injured. Travis Etienne hasn't had a good game in 4 weeks, but you know, I got through those 3 weeks. I looked really good.
Yeah. You played the game. Exactly. All right. Well, to any fantasy football interested listeners, this episode is for you. Pete, thank you so very much.
Of course. Always happy to talk football. Always happy to talk any sports.
Pete, I have a few more jersey questions if you have a few more moments.
Oh, yeah.
I was just going through them because I don't play fantasy football. So that bit was for me. I think my favorites are the marathon one and maybe the Boston Globe one. Do you have one that as a favorite right now?
You did ask me this and I should have this on the top of my head. All right. I think so. The Globe was the first one that really in my mind went to a lesser extent viral. Sure. That one was the first one where I was like, oh, people are like, this is really taking off. People are really liking this. I'm getting a lot of positive feedback. That was the one that kind of like,
you didn't get a cease and desist from the Globe.
I didn't get a cease and desist from the Globe. In fact, I had multiple Globe staffers retweeting it. So I was like, all right, great. Got the seal of approval on that one.
On balance, are you going to do the Herald?
I probably should. I mean, by win 55, I'm going to be so out of ideas. I'll be doing whatever I possibly can.
Well, Pete, this Friday is the anniversary of the Boston Tea Party. And ooh, the Boston Celtics play the Orlando Magic.
Ooh, that is just.
I'm a history teacher. That's I had to do it.
That's perfect. I love it. That is. Yeah,
come back to this well, baby. This is. Do you have any other favorites or like ideas you want to workshop or anything else?
I really like, I mean, the marathon one, I've done different iterations of that one. And I think this one turned out really well. That one, I just found, I think it was a picture of either the finish line or just maybe it might've been just the marathon logo spray painted on the ground. And that was kind of like all the pieces that I drew from for that. And it just, I think it worked really clean. I also am a sucker for any kind of like baby blue.
Well, a fun fact, the Celtics were almost named the Boston Unicorns. In tribute to the BAA.
There you go. Well, oh man, now I'm gonna have to make a unicorn's jersey.
I told you, baby, come on back.
I'm gonna be tweeting at you constantly for ideas.
Sure.
I think the two most recent that I really liked how they turned out were the Bruins Celtics one. I think that one turned out really clean. And then I'm surprised people liked it as much as they did, because it feels totally out of left field. But the kind of like Hawaiian clover print one that I did, sure, with the kind of neon Celtics, I love Hawaiian, and I feel like that kind of, it has that kind of vibe for me. But I was surprised at how well received it was by people. That one I think has a special place in my heart. I'm also a sucker for like jerseys that I don't think they would necessarily look great on the court, but it's more just kind of a fashion piece. And yeah, that one screams that to me. I don't really know if you've had shorts also with that pattern on it, it would look good. I think it would look pretty awful. But
it's like, it's like the power clash. Like it's so,
yeah,
it's the clashing is dashing situation.
Yeah. Also, but that one, I think
there's a cream embargo. Oh, I
loved that one.
Yeah.
No, but there's an embargo on them in the league because, and this is just gives me an extra reason to hate the Encore ads that they are projecting on through like green screen technology. Evidently, that's the color that they set it to, which is why those Cream City Bucks jerseys went away.
Oh, yeah, that's a good little factoid. I didn't know.
Yeah, that. I found that out right after actually I made that one, because I was also like, oh, this is,
it's really nice.
Pretty proud of that one turnout, and then I was like, oh, they can't do that. That's dumb.
All right, well, Pete, we took a ton of your time. We also are talking about a visual medium on a podcast. So let's pause the action and let people find you on Twitter. Is it Peter or Pete M. Rogers?
At Pete M. Rogers, yep.
At Pete M. Rogers. Go check him out if you haven't already. I think Celtics Wire has written about it. I think a bunch of people have picked it up because it's just like a really fun thing in the Celtics zeitgeist this season. For fantasy nerds, go check out Nerdball Fantasy Football. And maybe, who knows, maybe it'll be a Nerdball Fantasy Celtics podcast with you and Alex someday.
Sounds good.
Otherwise, Pete, pleasure's all on the side of the screen. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for reaching out.
And thanks to all the listeners. We'll catch you later.
As if the McCrispy couldn't get any better, Bacon and Ranch just entered the chat. The Bacon Ranch McCrispy. Available at participating McDonald's for a limited time. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.